to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
All right. Thanks for joining us. I always have a smile on my face, as Jack pointed out earlier, when I hear that song, 10-ton motorbike. And I'm especially happy today because we have in the studio the composer and player of that, Caleb Stein, joining us from Baltimore. Caleb, thanks for being here.
No, great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks.
The fiddler and fake drummer on that very track, yes.
All the above.
All the, you know, hammered it all out via computer technology.
Impressive. And thanks for joining us, dropping in for another edition of Origins, which today we're going to kind of bring the worlds of music and food together, I hope, in a cool way. And there's a lot of good reasons to do that with Caleb here. But first, I want to, like, let's go back and talk a little bit about you. We've known each other for a long time. I had a technical question, though, which is, what is a ballad?
A ballad in the, like, you know, musicology sense is a long, probably 10-minute song that puts most people in the room to sleep, but, like, the real music geeks will sit there afterwards and discuss, like, oh, no, but in the child version number 16, the maiden actually dies with a dagger to her heart, you know. A ballad is it's a story. It's a song that, you know, tells you this long evolving tale.
So could you give us a little sense of the ballad of Caleb Stein?
Oof. Well, short ballad is born in Pennsylvania, moved to Colorado, became a man in Baltimore.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the American journey, you know? It's a little bit everywhere, and I found it all in Baltimore, I feel.
Oh, I just got to chill hearing that. I don't know. That's a whole other issue.
I know. We're both such big fans of Baltimore. Yeah. We've got to be careful not to just make the whole conversation about that.
But, you know, the way you said that kind of, it brings to mind something that Martin Scorsese said. And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. But talking about film, he said, in film, it's all about what's in the frame and what's not in the frame. That's what it is. And your account, your ballad there of born in Pennsylvania, grew up in Colorado, you know, and became that for some, you said a lot, but you left a lot out. Could you talk about your songwriting in a way that, like that, that kind of distills it down? Because, and I should preface that by saying, like, some of the songs that you've written have stuck with me since I've heard them. And I heard you talk about narrative once, and it was what made me kind of think about ballads at a talk you did at Bird in Hand. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you do what you do.
Well, I am one of those lucky people who had a lot of music around me. My dad would play guitar for my sister and I at night before we go to bed. And, you know, he was one of those great children of the 60s who would, you know, sing a Bob Dylan song and maybe a ballad from, you know, centuries before. And with, you know, no professional sort of bent to it, but that just great classic human singing songs thing. And also a great lover of music. So he would always have, you know, Joni Mitchell or classical music blasting from the stereo. And I've come to realize that just having that sort of as the setting of childhood, you know, put it deep in my brain as like, this is something very important. And certainly in my emotional life, it just always felt like the thing. And so I would, you know, tickle the ivories on my grandparents' piano and, you know, was always interested, but for whatever reason, someday when I was, you know, 12 years old, over the summer, I asked my mom if I could get the guitar out of the case. And she said, sure, you know. And she knew a few guitar chords, too. Showed me four chords. Went to the grocery store. And I just sat there and played those four chords over and over again, you know, and I just turned it into a song. It was like, there were the building blocks, why not build something? So for me, songwriting and like playing this instrument just were always the same thing. And you know, since then, it's been part of the whole journey. I've got a 4-track cassette recorder with my McDonald's money and started making albums and handed them out to friends and just didn't stop.
Well, this was when you were. Are you already in Baltimore at this point? Are you making?
No,
your way?
I was in Colorado Springs. Growing up, yeah, and then just yeah.
So when did you get to Baltimore?
2000, 1999, 2000, right out of college, road trip, rambling around, and I thought, I mean, I didn't know where I wanted to be, but I was pretty sure I didn't want to be in New York or LA. I just had a sense that I didn't want to go that big, or that just kind of like played out. And I tell you what, the first night I was in Baltimore, met one of like my dear friends, ended up at the H&H at the Hole Gallery at some crazy party where like some power trio was hammering out like Nirvana, like crazy fuzzy stuff. And there's like, of course, you know, an art show that's been hung by God knows who. And we end up like at 3 a.m. after an after hours party over like the now Velocipede space. It was like some, you know, warehouse crazy thing. And it was like just a bucket of fried chicken and strippers were getting off work. And everybody's like sitting there talking and some dude sitting in the corner strumming a guitar. And it was just like, oh, okay, this is the kind of Jack Kerouac America that I've been looking for. And
so Baltimore got its hooks into you that first night, it sounds like.
Yeah, it just is so real, you know? It was just like, there was no holds barred, and just, here it is. If you want to get famous, don't live here. If you want to get rich, don't live here. But if you want like all the stuff about life, and if you want to be able to perfect your craft and sort of figure things out, it's here it is.
And if you want it to be real.
Yeah, right. I think that's kind of the thing everybody picks up on. If your radar is tuned to that.
So I wanted to draw a parallel, and the first parallel I have is I learned those 4 chords too early on, but that's all I ever did. That's about as far as it went for me. The other parallel I wanted to talk or start to draw, and this is where I was kind of asking you for your forbearance a little earlier, is a parallel between food and music, and then maybe we'll try to bring those together.
Yeah.
The thought I had was that we both do something that in this day and age is largely, it seems, your craft, music, and what you do in entertaining people, and what I do around food. Both of those things, I think you can make a case, are now largely created, almost manufactured, kind of for mass consumption. And a lot of times they seem like they come from somewhere else. You know, maybe in the case of food, who knows where it comes from most of the time. It's grown somewhere and it's processed in a factory and it ends up somehow on a store shelf or in a restaurant or whatever. In your case, with music, not in your case, but in the case of music, recorded in a studio somewhere, processed, you know, to within an inch of its life, and then distributed on the internet, or I guess basically on streamed, right?
Right.
What does it mean in this day and age then to be doing, I know I have a feel for what it means to be creating the food that I create and creating it for who I love to cook for in Baltimore and DC, but what does it mean to you now to be creating music in kind of this, in the digital age, the age of kind of corporate?
So many things. I mean, let's just riff here, because it could be anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, one thought that comes to me is language. You know, we have this expression that's become very regular now of like, man, you were killing it. You were killing it. I'm trying to bring to life, man, you were bringing it to life. Because I think that's what food and music and art do, is it's like nurture something and bring it out and let it grow. And really, we're in this world, you're so correct, of processing to death, to where It is death. It's kind of, we're in this kind of like floating tomb, and what's happening is we're kind of like guiding people's expectations towards, well, if it's not, you know, all corners aren't completely squared, and it's not glossy plastic, then it's not good enough for you. But here's the rub that they'll never be able to get over is something intrinsic inside of human beings. Once round and squishy and alive, so even though we're, you know, the suspects of our, we're receiving trillions of dollars of advertising to try to convince us otherwise, it's like when we hear Mississippi John Hurt strum a guitar, it just makes sense to us. When we eat like a delicious tomato sandwich that mom makes us, you know, or grandma or Spike, and it's there, and the bread and everything about it has been considered, and it's just human, you can't deny it. You love it. It's there. Another thing that I think a lot about in this context is like, look, we're heading to the dark ages, you know, probably. If we're really speaking frankly about this all, then like all indicators show that in the next couple decades, these problems are only going to be exacerbated. Now, what does that mean for people like us who are trying on the creative side and trying to keep optimism alive? Well, there's always in any current, there's always a subcurrent, and there's always the people that are keeping these ancient traditions going. And it may be a small percentage, but it's a percentage, and it's vital. And it's something that certainly needs to be there for young people. It certainly needs to be there for someone else to come along and see it and go, oh my God. And then who knows? Maybe then, you know, what I call frankness, maybe it will turn around. Maybe actually, you know, in a couple decades, the whole system will get flipped on its head. But either way, we have no choice but to do what we do with it, you know, because we've tasted that sandwich. we've heard those songs, and it's just part of the flow, right, at this point.
There's hardly anything better than a tomato sandwich in the right? middle of summer. Yeah. I'm a chef. I've been trying to figure it out for a long time, but yeah, I always come back to that. Maybe a more compelling way to bring food and music together would be for you to play a song.
Well, it is honestly one of the best topics to connect with people. Yeah, in literature or music or whatever.
And you happen to have a song that I was hoping you would play that does just that.
Well, you know, there are a lot of topics we could bring up that might get our feathers even more ruffled than they are. And there's a lot of things you listeners out there don't necessarily want to bring up at the water cooler because you might have a long, long conversation. But I think I found a topic that's going to bring us all together. A little something I like doing. I'm eating butter. I'm eating cheese. I'm eating anything I please. No need to tell me the calories. I'm eating butter. Yes, I eat gluten, and I eat meat. Hell, I'd eat a slice of pizza straight off the street. I'm on no diet, so I don't cheat. I'm eating butter. 'Cause butter is cream taken from a cow. They turn it to a solid, and I don't know how. Butter my pecans, put butter on my toast. But butter in my belly is the butter I like most. I'm eating butter. I'm eating jam. I'm eating bacon. Bacon from ham. No turkey bacon. No thank you, ma'am. I'm eating butter. I bet you use butter in this biscuit I'm eating over here. Cook. I'm eating cake. I'm eating those little Vienna sausages. I'm eating steak. I eat those things to take a break from eating butter. Cause butter is cream taken from a cow. They turn it to a solid and I don't know how. Butter my pecans, put butter on my toast. But butter in my belly is the butter I like most. I'm eating butter, I'm eating cheese, I'm eating anything I please. No need to tell me the calories. I'm eating butter. So pass those biscuits and hold the peas. I'm eating butter. Brought to you by the Real Food Movement. Right there, right there.
I think Origins just hit another gear here, and I'm going to have to take a minute. But it's amazing. Butter is so important, as this song proves or amply illustrates. And I've been working with an Amish farmer. Actually, I just can't help myself. But I will say that the butter we're using now is an entirely new thing for us, and we're working directly with an Amish farmer who is creating... just because I know you're a butter guy. I
Give mean, me some of that good.
Yeah, this is. I mean, there's butter, and butter is good. And then there's this butter that this Amish farmer is creating on his own farm now, which is a big thing. He was processing at a co-op, and the co-op there's this all this. There's too much milk in the world, and blah blah blah. Long story short, he has a dairy on his farm now. We're getting his butter. It is amazing. I'll get you some before you get out of here.
Okay,
you
right go. On.
It's that good. Did you start out to write that song and make it as funny as it is? Because I'm sitting here like laughing and crying at the same time because it's about something near and dear to my heart, but it's also it's a very funny song.
Well, I mean, the honest answer is I woke up with it in my head, and that's happened to me with a lot of songs. I think, but originally it was "She's Eating Butter." It was like a character, you know, but it. A lot of times with these things, it's like a little spinning wheel, you know, inside. And so like that, I remember like I just sort of walked around for a while that morning and it was there, and it was just kind of like all the parts just started coming together with which I'd be curious to know if there's any parallel for this in cooking. But a lot of times, it's not a hard and fast rule, but a lot of the songs that are the most connective are songs that came very quickly and in a sort of like a rush when they were being written.
For me, in a kitchen, it's a flash that then takes a long time to kind of, you know,
execute. But that like sort of idea kind of, it's almost like someone's handing it to you from another dimension.
It comes in a flash. It comes, or it's a funny, unexpected connection that gets made between, I don't know, two things that previously weren't connected.
Yeah,
that's not a great description,
but there's a feeling to it, right? There's a kind of like, it's almost like when it's starting, it's kind of like, I don't know, getting high or sleeping or something. It's a thing where you sort of realize like, oh, okay, I sort of got to just play it loose and not get too excited about it, but not hold it too quickly and just kind of ride this. And I don't know how long it's going to last.
And you're going to know it when you, like, when I feel like, shit, stop, you know, we've got to, look, there's something right here in this thing that's in front of us. That's, and I think that's, if I bring anything to, you know, this mishmash of what we're trying to do with food, it's like, I can see something like there's worth, like, let's figure this out because there's something here that's worth figuring out.
Yeah.
Another cool thing, you're writing and creating soundtracks for documentaries, a lot of which have to do with food. I mean, this just goes on and on. We've got this isn't just one song. And
yeah, and this has been a sort of unexpected branch in my life. I mean, I've always loved film. I've worked in film. You know, I've watched a lot of film. But then it became this thing where, you know, I did some soundtracks for some people, and it was sort of some nonprofits and things like that. And then of course, as you know, this idea of where our food comes from and everything, it's a lot of people who are thinking people are digging into this. So, yeah, I've done a series of films now about alcohol. There was a film about Baltimore beer called Brewmore, which sort of documented the rise of Union and touched in on Brewer's Art and a lot of other places and the history of it. But then most recently did one about mezcal farmers in Mexico, which ties into this whole sort of global conversation of how does stuff get made. You know, there are farmers in here that are, you know, this is like a family thing passed down, and some of them are still using mules and they're making it and producing it. And, you know, for some of them, it's meaning like, hey, now my kids can come back, and instead of working in America as migrant workers, they've got a place to work at my farm down here. And so it was a super cool project and super cool to try to figure out, okay, sonically, what does that mean?
And what is it called?
That one's called Agave Spirit of a Nation.
And is it?
It's just gone through the festival circuit. It premiered at South by Southwest earlier this year, but it'll be streamable soon, I would venture to say.
Are we able to hear any of that? Are we able to do that, Jack?
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. We'll play Agave Dreamer, yeah?
Wow. And is that you on?
That's me on everything. For better or worse. Yeah, that's.
Can you talk a little bit more about how? I mean, you started to, but I'd love to hear more about how that came together.
How the project came together? The creation of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been cool because, I mean, as you know, I'm just like deeply infatuated with American music and folk music, and so a lot of that has taken me down the path of fiddle and banjo music and these old ballads and country songs and blues. But these documentary projects run the gamut. I mean, from, you know, like inner city revitalization to Mexico. So I've had to like really learn a lot of other instruments and really wrap my head around synthesizers. And
so what were you hearing right there in that piece?
So that was a guitar, which you know, was my safety net, but then some accordion stuff, strings. I think there is a fiddle in there kind of in the background, and then some sort of like trumpet pads, synthesizer stuff, and percussion, you know, playing the percussion. So I tell you what, it's great musical education, is somebody saying like, hey, you know, we you know, well, and sometimes they don't even really know other than just sort of emotional words you'll start talking about. But hey, we need something that's expansive and that's going to convey this landscape and sort of the passion of these people. And you just kind of try to figure out how to paint that picture with sounds.
And when you put that in front of them, are the filmmakers, are they like losing their shit? Well, I mean, because I'm like listening to that, and now I want to see the film. I mean, that's
great. Yeah. That's the goal, you know. But it's so specific for the scene. Then, so what ends up happening is what may be something that makes me lose my shit and you lose your shit. It's like, oh well, no, but you know, in this scene, like, that's too dramatic, or that's too, you know, that's drawing too much attention. So, like everything in film, it is just this constant dialogue, and it's a lot of back and forth, and it's a lot of like serving the story. So what I've learned in this journey for me is like music and soundtracks are two different things. Like music, by its inherent nature, it's engaging, and it's like, here it is, this is everything, and like we're together, you're listening, I'm singing, we're engaged in this sound. But in film, so much of the time the music should be felt, not heard. So it's learning, okay, how do you create textures, how do you create things that kind of like take the viewer along for the ride, but they're not really even conscious of it.
Right. It'll get me started talking about music in restaurants, which is it's a rabbit hole. I'm not dragging you down that.
Well, you do a good job of that.
Although this much of the time,
I would bet there's a similar struggle in terms of licensing. I know for a lot of like no budget filmmakers, they're like trying to wrap their head around, how do I do this with, you know, without any.
I will say, when you get it right, it's like magical.
Yeah.
But the rest of the times. And another little cool little thing is that another track of yours, Road to Everywhere, will now be the intro music for the Farm Report on Heritage Radio.
That's cool.
So I think that's pretty cool too. I wanted to ask you about, I want to kind of get back to Baltimore and what it's like to, you now have this, is it fair to say that your reputation, your identity or whatever is kind of tied up with being a guy from of Baltimore?
Yeah, I think it's a quick way to kind of say what's going on.
And the reason I wanted to ask that is because I feel, again, trying to get this parallel, I want people to know how similar I am to Caleb Stein. But it's like, I feel so connected and so defined by this place, Baltimore, that we both spent a lot of our lives in. And I just wonder how that translates to a musician and your, what you sing about, and you've had some memorable lines and songs about being in Baltimore. And
well, can I play another song?
Oh yeah, we'd love that.
Yeah. I mean, to give a quick answer to that, and then to give a musical answer. It's like, you know, your soul is kind of looking for something else to resonate with, and Baltimore just was the place where it felt like, oh, okay, there's a lot of people here and there's a lot of stuff going on that I can dig and I feel like I can learn things from, and I can like pick up on stories. And this is a new one, and this is sort of like, I guess could be about anything, but it's only really could be written on a porch on Remington Avenue. Don't have to look too far if you're looking for someone to love. There's a lost dog sign on a telephone pole and a helicopter flying above. Chris rides a wheelie to the top of the hill. It's something that he's proud of. You don't have to look too far if you're looking for someone to love. Don't have to look too hard if you're looking for something to do. Walter's got work through the end of the year, and I hear there's some side jobs too. Lisa's trying to finish the porch for her mom. Luke's trying to stay off the drugs. You don't have to look too far if you're looking for someone to love. Summer nights nearly drown you. City lights push and pound you, but love ignites all around you. You don't have to feel too bad, and certainly not for too long. Katie's band is playing at the end of the week, and she asked if you'd be coming along. Jake found a kitten in the storm last night. It was hiding in an old leather glove. You don't have to look too far if you're looking for someone to love. If you're looking, still looking for someone to love.
I just have to let that settle in for a second. That's beautiful. That's new.
Yeah, that's in the last, I don't know, 10 months or something. Yeah, came quick, but like you're saying, yeah, still subtle refinements all the time.
It's just it's like it could be anywhere, but it's definitely Baltimore. Like, I can see I can see those details, and I can almost see those people. Our people.
Yeah. It's, I tell you, one of the things that I've really been thinking about in the last couple years is mediums and what they're good at. And, you know, songs are super good at emotional bits and at kind of snapshots and stacking images. One thing I find that I kind of push against the edges of is they're not great at telling long narrative arcs. And unlike, say, a film or a novel. And it's just intriguing to start to feel inside of yourself, you know, okay, what are the different media? Oh, okay, I've been fooling around with some other mediums, with painting and with, you know, writing. But it's cool. It's cool when a song, when any medium sort of does what it does super well and it clicks, that's when you feel like you're in that sweet spot. You're like, oh, okay, I'm not attempting to like make a film here, but I crammed it into a song. Like, and I feel like, yeah, like that song, it kind of does what it needs to do. Hopefully, like, hopefully it takes you on that journey in 3 minutes and there it is.
It took me to a very specific place, on Remington Avenue, I guess, where it was probably written, right? And I think it's a beautiful point you're making about, and I think I might have had that revelation at a certain point where I finally understood what it was I was actually trying to do with cooking. Like, I think you can go years, and maybe you can go on almost forever without actually ever understanding. I've had a lot of help, understanding what it is that I'm trying to do. But I think I went for a long time without knowing.
What do you think sort of helped clarify?
I realized at a certain point that I was cooking for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't cooking the cooking that I was doing for myself, which is a lot of what a lot of restaurant foods feels like. It's like I'm cooking as a way of expressing something.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't, it's creativity in that kind of creativity in quotes sense, which I'm not sure serves us that well when we're eating. Not entirely, and it's been the current that I've ended up swimming against for a long time, because I think there are other things to think about when it comes to food. And when I started to think about the people I was feeding, probably first my family and then looking at my guests in the restaurant, I started to think about it in a different way. And that was the first time I did anything that anybody cared about, including me.
Well, I think that that's a huge parallel with music, because I would say that, yeah, that's been part of the journey for me. It is sort of realizing that, okay, it's always going to have two sides, and there's always going to be a very personal side of the creativity, like you're saying. And in fact, for me, I feel like a lot of music, especially early on, was like a survival mechanism, and it really served me well to get me out of Colorado, to get me out into the world, to help me deal with a lot of things in my life and kind of make sense of a lot. And it still does and always will, you know, but not all of that needs to be presented to other people. And I think that maybe that's part of it with these different mediums too, is you sort of start to realize exactly what you said. Who is this for? If I'm bothering to be up on stage and doing this, this is an event that we're creating together, you know, the audience and myself. And okay, let's focus on that. And it doesn't mean stop being creative. It just means, what is this form that I'm doing here? And yeah, I may like go home and spend a lot of time making a comic book and like show it to a couple friends, and that's fun and that's a cool thing, and I can get out ideas and other things. But you know, when I stand up and there's hundreds of people there and we're all there for the same purpose, it's like, okay, now this is the job. The job is getting people to feel something, you know, and getting us all to this same place, and getting us all to celebrate life and tap into that ancient thing that happens when people get together and start making vibrations.
Which, as you pointed out, is way more about bringing something alive, making something come alive, than killing it. And it's funny because we have a lot of that same jargon, you know, in restaurants and in kitchens. We want to crush it. We want to kill it. And we want to, you know, I forget what the term is when we like, there used to be this thing where somebody you knew came into the restaurant, you just wanted to destroy them. It's like, right. What do we say? You know, I want to like.
Well, it's our culture, right? I mean, that is what we live in. We live in this pressure cooker. I mean, we live. All of us are just like sprinting at full speed because the iron jaws of capitalism are right at our heels, and unless we, you know, keep it up, we're just afraid we're going to be chopped to bits. So we have this whole culture that's built around like macho, it's so masculine, it's so metallic. And really, I think if we're learning anything in 2018, it's like, hold on. Okay. Maybe that's a big part of this culture that we've created, but human beings, that's not what works for us. And we need to really get some moon energy and some feminine energy in here, and we need to get like a bunch of growth and natural stuff. And okay, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe that's going to mean a huge pay cut, but maybe that'll save your life. I think we're going to be dealing with that for a long, long time, because we've sort of set this thing in motion that's just destroying people. It is literally, it's destroying people. So this, as purveyors of language, as creative people, I do feel like it's something worth talking about and worth being conscious of in our own life. Since we're the ones putting out the vibrations, what is it we're doing? And let's be honest, a lot of it is ego-driven. And ego's not bad. I mean, we need to feel driven to get up in the morning and not just like snooze again. But what is it about? Like you're saying, are we reaching out outside of ourselves, or are we just trying to like feed that little delusional voice in our head of like, I'm not good enough, but if I prove to them I'm good enough,
or if I sell more, or if I there's another quality of this culture right now that ties in with the things you mentioned, which is the disposability of everything.
Everything.
And including art, where it seems to be made and consumed in the blink of an eye.
Yes.
And is there value, can there still be value, I guess, in things that last? Or, you know, a song that's played here and then later and then on down, as opposed to something that was, it's a hit right now. It had a million streams and nobody ever thinks of it again.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not going to have any lasting value if the person creating it doesn't believe that. And if that's not something that you have as a solid value inside of yourself. So that's where it's got to start. And yeah, I would say for me and my contemporaries, it's something we talk about all the time. Because certainly the landscape of the music business has, it's just been strip mined. It's a total free for all. Everything is 100% changed. And for good and bad, you know, I think we're forced to reconsider something that might have just felt like gospel 15 years ago. Like, of course you make albums and like that becomes, well, all of that now is sort of on its head and it's like, okay, I mean, I enjoy albums. I will always love albums. I will always make albums. But were musicians making albums 100 years ago? No. In terms of the course of human history, recorded music is just a total novelty and a flash in the pan. And what we're seeing now is there's other novelties replacing that. So you have to kind of dig deeper and look at, okay, what are the other more, you know, lasting currents of music. Again, it comes back to this live thing, and it comes back to, for me, a big part of the mission is it's an everybody thing. So part of it is democratizing it and sort of fighting against this, or showing an alternative to American Idol and this horrible delusion we have that, like, oh, unless you're the best at it, don't even try. If you're not Michael Jordan, don't pick up a basketball. You know, if you can't play like Jimi Hendrix, why bother? Well, that's a horrible way to have a culture. Like, culture is actually like, oh, you play the G chord that way, I play it this way. And like, oh, you made a song about butter, that's cool. I made a song about, you know, my dog. And that's what we need to get back to, because that's what it naturally is. That's what it just bubbles up as being.
I don't want to end this, but I think we have run out of time.
Okay, hey, look at that.
And we're going to what?
You do one more song if you want. We have time for that.
Can we play out?
We can play out.
But
yeah.
Can we hear one more song?
Yeah.
And before totally. We do that, can we talk about what the next chance that anybody that loves this music as much as I do would get to hear it?
Are people listening right now?
They are.
Oh, okay, this has been live? Have they been hearing us swearing and talking, rambling on philosophically about God knows what?
Let's hope so.
Okay. Well, tomorrow night up in Baltimore, Maryland, at the lovely Patterson Park, my band and I are playing at 6:30, 6:30, 8:30. Let's hope there's no rain.
In the shadow of the iconic pagoda.
Yeah, man, it's one of my favorite concerts to do. Yeah, it's like everybody's there. Bring your dog, bring your blanket, bring a kite, do whatever you want to do in the park there. We'll kick it out with some Woody Guthrie. Well, I've been doing some hard traveling, I thought you knowed. Been doing some hard traveling way on down the road. I've been doing some hard traveling, hard rambling, hard gambling. Been doing some hard traveling. Well, I've been working out in the field now, I thought you knowed. North Dakota to Kansas City, way on down the road. Bagging that wheat and stacking that hay, trying to make about a dollar a day. Well, that's some hard traveling, Lord.